live from the Poly Market Studio in LA. It's the Young Turks. You're about to watch what we call an extended clip of the Young Turks. And the reality is, it's somewhere in the middle. It's a little longer than our YouTube clips, but it's actually shorter than the whole 2-hour show, which you can get if you're a member. You can get it ad free, and make sure you catch every news story we do that day. You're going to love it as a full show. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Thanks for watching.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Young Turks. Cenk is still gone. I am John Iadarola, and I sort of subconsciously just pronounced our name the way Mark Thompson does a little bit. Because he's here and he's influencing me as he does everyone with his amazing voice.
Welcome back to the panel, Mark. Nice.
What did you do? I want to hear it again.
Yeah.
No, I can't.
You're on the spot.
No, I can't do it. No.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but.
You know what I think he said?
I like that. I'm
welcome to the Young Turks.
No. What I say is, and it's what I say now every time I leave the building, I say, Young Turks. Like, I always say it a little bit like that. But
because
anyway.
When I come in, I say that.
Because Mark is here. Jared Jackson also here. Somebody must have accidentally moved your chair over here. I thought you're supposed to be over there. What's going on?
The thing is sometimes you sneak in, mm-hmm. and then once the camera's on, you can't move me. Mm-hmm. It's over.
Yeah, you had your own climate control community over there.
That's
now
true.
You're going to have to swim with the rest of us.
It's always great when Jared's at the main table. I saw a comment on, I think, YouTube that said, it's kind of messed up that they make him sit over there. Like, you think we told him to sit over
this
there?
Is he the, wanted to sit this over is the there. Secret. Most of the time, I'm not even sitting
He's
over there.
He's not over there.
He does not want to get us on him, is the truth of
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. That said, lots of news. We are going to return to one of my personal favorite topics, fuel efficiency, transportation, energy, all mashed together, and we're moving in the wrong direction. But at least we're moving fast in the wrong direction. We've got that. Oh, there is a story out of Louisiana, a story of injustice in our criminal justice system that I saw Sean King tweeting about that is mind-blowing. And it's still ongoing. This isn't a story that we have a resolution for. Perhaps you can get involved, actually. But we're going to start off with the biggest story of the day, the legal circus that is Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani just joined Trump's legal defense team in the past couple of days, basically, and he's already making breakthroughs in the case for the other side. He was on Sean Hannity's show last night, and when he was asked about the payments that Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, had made to Stormy Daniels, one of the porn stars that Trump had an affair with, he revealed something new. Let's take a look.
Having something to do with paying some Stormy Daniels woman $130,000? I mean, which is going to turn out to be perfectly legal. That money was not campaign money. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know. It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation. So
they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through the law firm, and the president repaid it.
Oh, I didn't know he did.
Yep.
There's no campaign finance law.
Zero.
That is great. Everything that Rudy Giuliani said is awesome, but I love Sean Hannity's, I didn't know that. You just revealed way too much.
Please just read the cards,
yes,
Rudy.
Exactly. You're not here to give us new info. So the reason that is significant is because, of course, up until this point, everyone involved in this story has denied that Trump knew anything about this or that he had repaid Michael Cohen, which I found very plausible because he doesn't pay people. Michael Cohen had said he'd never been reimbursed. Trump said he had no knowledge of this whatsoever. Sarah Huckabee Sanders had said there's no knowledge. And then suddenly, casually, Rudy Giuliani, the new guy, the newbie, comes out and says, no, he was repaid. He was repaid.
And also, so this was part of a string of a whole bunch of interviews he was doing. He started with Sean Hannity. It was the majority of this, and it was by 30 minutes straight of them talking, mm-hmm. was about Comey, well, mostly Mueller, and the investigation, how he's going to make sure he counsels the president not to speak, or whether or not they will speak with Mueller under certain conditions. What about what the Clintons went through?
Yeah.
What about what, we don't make sure this isn't a perjury trap. Again, we'll get into why that doesn't make any sense. How concerned about your president lying about what he did. But that's the concern. Not that he might lie, mm-hmm. but that they might set him up to lie. Yeah. It's real easy. If he's not going to lie, then answer the questions truthfully. I thought that's what we do in America.
Yeah, Giuliani had, it seemed, a couple of agendas, mm-hmm. right? One was to dirty up the investigation, which mm-hmm. he did. And as you say, he was kind of on a media tour to do just that, right? To run down the, mm-hmm. the special counsel and to essentially buttress the idea that the investigation is a witch hunt and it's so far off course that it's become tainted by a lot of government involvement and government overreach is the way he might put it in perhaps not those words, but suggesting yeah. that this entire thing has now taken on a political tone. While, of course, what he's doing is a purely political exercise.
Yeah.
And then he's trying to clear Trump from the idea that there is collusion. And that's why he was trying, and campaign problems, and that's why he was getting into that soundbite that we just heard, right? But it leaves open the door for obstruction of justice.
Yeah, he thought that he simply had to lay out that it wasn't campaign funding and that we wrapped the whole thing up. He paid him back, not realizing that each part of that also opened up Trump to more legal jeopardy. Now, I realize that many of you watching this are not shocked to find out that Donald Trump is lying about something, even lying about potential law breaking. But for those who are maybe new to this, haven't been paying attention for the past year, I want to make it very clear. Let's play this next video where you're going to see Donald Trump totally denying any knowledge of this sort of thing.
Did you know about $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels? Then why did Michael go and make it if there was no shooter allegations?
Well, you have to ask Michael. Michael's my attorney, and you'll have to ask Michael.
So he didn't know anything about it, even though apparently by the time he was asked that question, he had already paid for it and paid more, paid for the taxes on it and all of that. You mentioned that Rudy Giuliani was on a media tour. Part of that was an interview at the Washington Post where he was asked by Robert Costa, when was the president told about these payments? And Giuliani said he wasn't, since it was somewhere between 10 and 5 days before the election, and he wasn't told. But even if he was told, he wouldn't have remembered it. So that's an airtight case they got there. Like I wouldn't have remembered it. Also, I don't remember it. Also, where am I? He was paid out of personal funds, which covered that and possibly a few other things that, you know, would be considered incidental. I would love to find out what those other things are. And then they tried to craft this thing where they had a retainer that he was being paid out of, but that's not what retainers for lawyers are. I feel like these guys have only like heard about retainers on TV shows or something. It's not for repayment of totally non-legal, non-campaign personal expenses. It doesn't make any sense.
So these kinds of things, the lie, of course, has to evolve, but in this case, devolve, because of once you say the first line and people go, hey, well, that doesn't really make much sense there, Rudolph. That's not how this may work, because that's a problem. You may have cleared the one aspect, and we'll get to what some ethics, mm-hmm. Former ethics heads have said about what this did lead to. Now you have to change your story to the next step. So now, oh man, my bad, that's right. He knew about paying something back, just not about exactly what it is. So yeah. I can keep my veil over. He didn't know what was going on. Then there was some non-disclosure agreement, which we still haven't talked about yet, how if or why he did or did not sign it. Now that is all up in the air. It's, as you mentioned, John mentioned it right before we came on. There's now this dust, cloud of a dusty lie. And now you have to try and decipher as you look through all the cloud, what part of it is true, what part of it is not, what part of it are half lies, what part of it have truths. But after you come, whatever you come up with, they then go, well, not that part, just the 25% of that part, and then the 35% of this part is what's true. So now we're just confused.
Yeah. And the problem is that so he goes out last night. He says this stuff reveals it. It throws their whole legal strategy up in the air. And then he's saying, well, Trump called me and said that I did a great job. But then in the next morning, he has to go on Fox and Friends and clarify it. Donald Trump tweets a bunch of stuff, which we'll read in a second. Both of them create ripple effects from that of issues that are going to have to be resolved. So let's turn now to the next set. Donald Trump, who was apparently very happy with Rudy Giuliani abruptly revealing what they had all been denying for months at this point, then tweeted this. And let's see how likely it is that Trump himself was actually the person tweeting this. Mr. Cohen, an attorney, received a monthly retainer, not from the campaign and having nothing to do with the campaign, from which he entered into, through reimbursement, a private contract between two parties known as a non-disclosure agreement or NDA. Somebody pointed out he apparently has a term of the day calendar. These agreements are very common among celebrities and people of wealth, also Donald Trump. In this case, it is in full force and effect and will be used in arbitration for damages against Ms. Clifford's. The agreement was used to stop the false and extortionist accusations made by her about an affair, despite already having signed a detailed letter admitting that there was no affair. Prior to its violation by Mrs. Clifford and her attorney, this was a private agreement. Money from the campaign or campaign contributions played no role in this transaction. Now, they're focusing a lot on this NDA that Donald Trump has until recently known nothing about, if you believe what he said. So somehow this entire thing was crafted and paid for without any of his knowledge whatsoever. And that's incredibly important because all of this was going on in the immediate run-up to the election, where any sort of payment like this would be an in-kind contribution to his campaign and would be a violation of campaign finance laws, the few laws we actually have in this country that mandate how much you can actually spend.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Also, by the way, and this is just sort of a tangential thing, he's being sued by Stormy Daniels and her lawyer for defamation. And apparently, I haven't been following that case very closely, but apparently up until now, it's been sort of like, hasn't really talked about her too much. So the idea that he's defaming her was a little bit hard to prove. But right there, he attacks her multiple times in a very clear way. So while he's trying to defend himself from the Michael Cohen thing, he might have been making this part worse for himself as well legally.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, it is lies, lies, lies. And as you say, for a guy who knows nothing, as he was confronted by the press on the plane about the $130,000, he said, "I don't know anything." And then you saw in those tweets that John just read, he knows everything. I mean, down to sort of granular specifics. And then as John says, he mentions her by name. So there could be a defamatory aspect to this. There are all sorts of issues here. And I'm so glad that JR mentioned the dustiness and just kicking up dust to make this investigation so cloudy that one begins to lose track of fact. That's deliberate. And the idea here, and Giuliani was part of it, even though he did it clumsily, the idea was to go on a media jihad for Trump, to begin to dirty up this investigation and try to clear the name of Trump in any way possible. And that's what Rudy is out there doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're all doing. In fact, this new defense team for Trump is going to do that more. They're going to fight the political fight even as they fight the legal fight on the side. That way, they don't have to deal with as many facts.
Because then people who support this administration blindly, they already know that's how it works for the base. So as long as there's no clear-cut facts that come out to make someone have to change their mind, where they go, "Wow, that happened?" The way that there was a surprise in Sean Hannity's voice when he said, "Oh, really?" Like when you stop and go, "Yeah, how do I keep going with this?" That can't be there. If it's there, then there's no more arguments where the people can say, "Oh, you just hate the president." But as long as there's still this cloud of unsure facts floating around and lies floating around, the sycophants can say, "Oh, you just hate our president. Yeah. Stop with this." Because I don't know what's going on because it's hard to tell.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not getting any accurate information. For one of the reasons I find this to be interesting is Rudy Giuliani and others are saying that Cohen didn't do anything, Trump didn't do anything. But in fact, the person who should be investigated are all of the investigators in this matter, because what they're doing in relation to Michael Cohen is illegal and immoral and all of that. They keep attacking that and all of that. But here's the thing. They're investigating Michael Cohen for good reason, and the reasons keep getting better every day. if he is saying that he wasn't repaid, and he said that multiple times, although we now find out that he has been being repaid month after month until eventually it was all repaid, why is he lying about that? What possible explanation could there be for that? And Rudy Giuliani actually doesn't have a good response to that. If we could go to video 7, actually, you're going to see Giuliani attempting to cover for that obvious follow-up to what he had revealed on Hannity's show.
Something that did stand out to me, I remember when Michael Cohen was interviewed about it, and it seemed like he was saying that he was never reimbursed that $130,000, and now it sounds like the story's changing.
Well, he was definitely reimbursed. There's no doubt about it.
So why did he say he wasn't?
Maybe. First of all, if we had to defend this as not being a campaign contribution, I think we could do that. This was for personal reasons. The president had been hurt personally, not politically, personally so much, and the first lady, by some of the false allegations. That one more false allegation, right, 6 years old. I think he was trying to help the family, and for that, the man is being treated like some kind of villain. And I think he was just being a good lawyer a good man.
There's no explanation there as to why he would have lied about that. And also, if he was just helping him out of the goodness of his heart, has nothing to do with the campaign, why was he paid back at all? If he was just helping him out, that seems a little bit odd.
Or was he paid back?
I mean, who knows? And here's the thing. That is important because, as you alluded to, there are potential that could have been illegal as well. Former President Obama ethics chief Norm Eisen is, and by the way, he's just one of many saying this. The revelation that the president repaid Michael Cohen may prove that Trump broke the law by failing to disclose the loan from Cohen on his federal presidential financial disclosures. So, look, if it was about the campaign, or if he didn't pay him back, then Michael Cohen likely broke campaign finance laws. If it wasn't about the campaign and Trump did pay him back, then it looks like Trump violated laws having to do with financial disclosures.
And that,
so they really have to choose their poison here.
Yeah, and but you saw Giuliani default to that there was no problem with campaign contributions being used to pay Michael Cohen. You see him default to that position. They want to claim that high legal ground. But as you said, John, there are other areas of the law that are clearly running afoul of. And so I don't know how they put out all these fires. So that's why I say they're just really waging a public media campaign now. They're really just trying to win the sentiments of the public, such that the drumbeat of end this investigation gets so loud that something has to be done, or you undercut the results of the investigation.
Who knew Ainsley Earhart would be the one who has the hard-hitting question?
Yeah.
So Michael Cohen said that he wasn't repaid. It seems like this is changing. He goes, well, he was. Usually that's where it would end. Mm-hmm. Instead, she said, so why did he say so?
Yeah.
The best follow-up questions are usually why, when, how. But she just straight up said, so why did he say so?
Yeah.
And he couldn't answer it. But then moved on. Whenever you don't want to answer, you go on to something personal. It hurt the president personally.
That was all just rhetoric. And you know, so much of this, and you'll see this, I think, more in the days ahead, Giuliani and a lot of the people who Trump has surrounded himself with, they're full of an arrogance. They're full of political arrogance, and they're full of arrogance that comes from having a lot of money and power. And that's something else you should remember. Very rich people, and I'm not one of those people who just hates all rich people, but this is a pretty hateful group of rich people, and they're not used to playing by any rules at all. Not the rules, certainly, that you and I play by. And I think you're seeing that arrogance and not playing by the rules is being played out in a very transparent way.
Yeah. By the way, there was one other way that last night, or I guess in the follow-up this morning, Rudy Giuliani undercut what they were trying to say. One of his main missions on Fox and Friends was to say that this had nothing to do with the campaign. He kept saying that. It had nothing to do with the campaign. It was purely personal. He was just trying to protect the feelings of Melania Trump. I would say one of the best ways to do that is to not sleep with an adult film star a couple months after she gives birth. But, you know, what do I know? I've never been married. But he kept saying that. And then later on in that same sit-down interview with Fox and Friends, he then said, can you imagine what it would be like if this came out during that last debate with Hillary Clinton? How damaging that would be? Well, you seem to be saying it had an effect on the election, or that its absence took away what could have been an effect on the election. So, man, I'm so glad that he's joined Trump's defense team. It is just great for them. But as we've been alluding to, this isn't the only thing that he's there for. I mean, it very much is a media blitz on the offense. And one of the things he's attacking is the legitimacy of the entire investigation. He said this. The basis of the case is dead. Sessions should step in and close it. There's been too much government misconduct. The crimes now have all been committed by the government and their agents, not by any of the almost two dozen people that have been indicted or several that have already pled guilty to charges coming out of the investigation. Not them. Just the government agents.
But
and this is, we're hearing this more and more every day.
Exactly. But and there it is, government misconduct. I said government overreach before, but he's suggesting specifically those investigators have their own political agenda, which is bizarre also, since they're GOP appointed.
So
none of this stuff passes the smell test, but it is part, as you say, of a media blitz, and it is going to continue.
Yeah. Other thoughts?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, well, we're going to go to our first break, though. When we come back, this morning, the media actually got it wrong on a story and had to correct themselves, but did so. And so we're going to talk about that when we come back from this break.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. You're only halfway through, so hold, stay right here. Just want to remind you, if you want to get all five segments of the Young Turks commercial free, these are just two of them. Every day we do it. So go to tytnetwork.com/join. And you get the whole five segments, 2 hours, ad-free. Do it now.
Welcome, everyone. I am Lisette Padilla. Happy to be back with you. I'm also joined by Maitha Alhassan and Mark Thompson.
Hi.
You may be familiar with them as well. They've been here quite a bit. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot going on with me. As you know, if you've ever visited my website, I've never found a way to cohesively put everything I do together. So I have my PhD in American Studies and Ethnicity, and I have a background in social justice organizing, doing media stuff. I was a co-host on Al Jazeera for a couple of years. And then what else have I done? Art, poetry, traveled a lot.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
That's all right.
Wow. Okay. You've got the job. You're overqualified. Yeah. I'm Mark Thompson. Good to see you again. And I have a podcast called The Edge with Mark Thompson. You have to put the with Mark Thompson part in because there are a million shows called The Edge. It's a pleasure to be here. I have a PhD from the streets. Yeah. No, it's great. And it's really a pleasure to be on the panel with you both.
Thank you. It's good to be with
Likewise. It's good to be back. To start off with our first story, we're going to be talking about Stephen Clark. You might be familiar with this story already. So Stephen Clark, as you may remember, was fatally shot and killed by Sacramento police officers. And even though he was not armed, there are some conflicting videos and evidence that suggests that this may have been unnecessary for other reasons as well. Now, there are contradicting reports on how many shots Stephen Clark was hit with, as well as where those shot entered his body. Now, the Sacramento coroner's report states that Clark was hit 3 times in the back and 7 times total, but the Clark family actually hired an independent investigator who states that the total number of shots was actually 8, and 6 of those shots were fired on his back. Now, this is important because the difference in opinion here has a lot to bear on any future case, and the Clark family is expected to file a civil suit. Now, I want you to take a look at some of the graphics here to illustrate where the shots may have been. Now, it's hard to tell from this, but one of the things that has happened more recently is that the private investigator released a photograph. We won't release the photograph due to its graphic nature, but he stated this of the photo. Experts may have different opinions, but a picture is a picture. A picture does not have an opinion.
Yeah, they're saying essentially, look, I don't care what these bought and paid for coroners are saying, mm-hmm. who are trying to support a certain narrative. In this case, the argument goes, right, that it's supporting a law enforcement narrative. So that would mean that most of the shots are in the front, right? The more shots that are in the back, the more law enforcement is on thin ice. It's like, why did you shoot a guy who's running away from you?
Right.
In other words, there's no threat to you if he's running away from you, is the thinking. So in essence, that's why that the private investigator released those photos that they're damning. The cops keep the narrative going about how there's a threat to their lives. And that's really and really that's what's underpinning the whole law enforcement story.
Well, it's what should tell you a lot is the way that the police story continues to change consistently. So that's always the question, which is whose story is remaining consistent and whose story changes. And we've already seen this multiple times, the fact that the police have in different cities, like most recently in Brooklyn, have been charged with lying about finding a gun in an apartment. And then last year, there's a whole series of investigations around cops planting fake evidence in traffic stops that were caught on tape. So this is not too inconsistent with how law enforcement has treated mostly Black folks. And it should be said that Dr. Bennett Amalu, and we've talked about this before concerning the Stephon Clark case, comes from very reputable background, a very reputable background. He was the pathologist who was able to identify the brain injuries that led to the brain injuries in NFL players that led to a huge investigation and even a big Hollywood film around this topic. So his story has stayed the same. And I hope that the press isn't won over with the consistently morphing story of the police department. And, you know, Malu said some really interesting things, which was that the coroners did not take the spinal cord out, which would have been necessary. It would have been tricky, but it would have been necessary to really assess the damages to the body. And the fact that when he flipped over the body, he also saw the shots to the back, which, again, they could have missed in their first account as well. So, you know, I kind of trust the guy who has a long background in history in this work, and also who, I mean, yes, he was hired as a private investigator, I mean, as a private pathologist, but, you know, he really has a lot more credibility than the police department.
Yeah, I think in this particular case, too, and in many cases, what is unfortunate is that the coroner's office will typically perform an autopsy, and in performing that autopsy and gathering evidence, body parts are removed, things are changed, holes are poked into the body. Like, it becomes something that it wasn't in its original form after the incident. And when we have private investigators and pathologists, scientists taking a look at bodies during the second round, it can lead to a lot of discrepancies and perhaps errors. So that makes it a bit complicated. I think that that's something that will definitely be discussed more. But I think you're right that the narrative here is what's important. And regardless of whether it was three shots or six shots in the back, I think when we look at the footage, it's clear that some of this violence may have been completely unnecessary.
And the DA there has a lot of questions about her reluctance to bring forth a prosecution. She has a lot of law enforcement money flowing into her campaign. And so that is something that Anne-Marie Schubert's her name. She's a friend of law enforcement, and so reluctant to bring any charges is the argument against these law enforcement officers. And that argument's backed up with a lot of evidence of law enforcement monies flowing into her campaign. So there is more than just some confusion about this. It would appear that there is money affecting this entire narrative as well.
Totally. I totally concur.
Okay. So Cambridge Analytica, the marketing research firm embroiled in the Facebook election scandal, is shutting down. It has ceased all of its operations and is expected to file for bankruptcy. Now, the company has not admitted any wrongdoing, but in a statement released, they said the following. The siege of media coverage has driven away virtually all of the company's customers and suppliers. As a result, it has been determined that it is no longer viable to continue operating the business. Now, if you're not too familiar with Cambridge Analytica and their marketing research methods, an employee actually gave us a little bit of insight about how the company worked and some of their tactics. Take a look.
This app then crawls through your social network and captures all of that data. Also, so by you filling out my survey, I capture 300 records on average, right? And so that means that all of a sudden, I only need to engage 50,000, 70,000, 100,000 people to get a really big data set really quickly.
So while only about 300,000 people filled out the company's survey and accepted that their data be shared with the company, because these 300,000 or so people shared their data, they also inadvertently shared their friends' data, and their friends on Facebook were completely unaware of this. This is what people are very upset about, that their data may have been used in political ads and campaigns that they did not consent to.
Yeah, this is like the old, in the early days of HIV, they talked about the fact that, you know, everyone you have sex with, you're having sex with everyone that they had sex with. And, you know, that's how the virus spread in this case.
Thanks for the visual.
This suggests, well, I believe me, the visual can get a lot worse than that. It's how this entire data mining has spread. And by the way, I like that we've reached a point in the culture. I really mean it. I mean, I literally like it that the authority in this story, who we got a little information and detail from, has that wild do with the pink, and it doesn't actually undercut his credibility. It actually reinforces his credibility. Yes. Meaning, you know, in the new world of technology, there's no dress code. There's nothing. Like, this is a more credible source. So it's an aside, but I kind of like that moment. Let's make no mistake, though. Cambridge Analytica it may be shutting down, or it may, but I think what's happening here is a little what happened with Blackwater.
I was literally going to say that,
the
too. The
private military service, Blackwater, they closed down and they reconstitute themselves. There's a lot of different things, different companies that continue to do the same paramilitary operations that are both domestic and foreign. So I think that's what's going to happen here with Cambridge Analytica. They're closing down, but they've already reopened in another form under another name. So I'm not particularly encouraged by this at all.
Right. Public condemnation doesn't equal demise or ultimate demise as well. And, you know, for folks that don't know, Eric Prince behind Blackwater moves to Abu Dhabi, forms this company called EX something, and it probably is on its third or fourth iteration at this point to evade any sort of public scrutiny linking him to a private mercenary company. So, yes, I completely agree with that. And the issue is that folks are probably going to get away with what they have done, and they're not going to be held culpable. I mean, there's this aggregate IQ as well, other sort of companies. And I will say that I do feel really, really shameful that I took that personality test of which city that I thought that I belonged to, because that's what this was mining. But the last thing I'll also say is that for as much as this is getting is being stigmatized, Cambridge Analytica, because it intervenes with our liberal democratic narrative, we've also evaded in drawing attention to another company that was also accused of data mining, Geofidia. It was in the news a couple of years ago, and I wish it got as much attention that Cambridge Analytica did, and I'll tell you why it didn't. Geofidia mined people's profiles from Facebook who had priors, so priors in a legal law enforcement sense, and sent it to law enforcement so that law enforcement would be able to pool people's identities when they were at protests to see if they could go after them based on whether or not they had priors. So clearly that's affecting a certain kind of population instead of a certain kind of narrative we have about ourselves as an America that has free and fair elections. So While you all are holding Cambridge Analytica to the fire and watching where it morphs as well, please do look up what happened with Geofidia and also Color of Change's campaign trying to highlight the horrendous things that this company has done as well.
Wow, that's extraordinary. I didn't know that. I think it's interesting, as you're speaking, I'm thinking, wow, it's worth reminding us all that when you take that personality test on Facebook and it's free, Or when you sign up for Facebook and it's free. Nothing's free. When you go on Google and it's a free search, it's not free. It's keeping track of your search. Your data, who you are on Facebook, how you make contributions to Facebook, all of your posts, even you taking that personality test, which is sort of the you know, bald-faced example of it that we've heard from Cambridge Analytica, all those things are being monetized. If you're not paying for it, then you're paying for it another way. And it just, again, it's something to keep in mind moving forward. Nothing is free. If you're not paying for it, you're paying for it with data when it comes to technology.
Right. So, and we all need to be wary of companies like this that, like you say, offer us a free product generally, because really what they're, the cost is unknown. Now, in this particular case with Cambridge Analytica, I guess the silver lining might be that their ads likely did not work very well. So there isn't any research available currently that says that people are good at taking this data and turning it into compelling ads that will sway your political preferences. There is some evidence that they can sway your purchasing actions as well as your beliefs that when they're associated with your personality. So if ads are targeted towards your personality, they may influence your purchase of a beauty product, but there's very little evidence that they can influence who you vote for, not for decisions that big. So that may be the silver lining here.
Right. Well, I mean, I would say too that unfortunately we sometimes don't take an interdisciplinary approach around this. So it might be a little bit of influence from that and influence from possible like Russian collusion and influence from all these other different vectors. And that's what I'm interested in seeing is some sort of study that combines all those variables to see what produced a certain outcome. But I'll also note, because we love to see ourselves as a, again, a free liberal democracy, that we feel especially hurt when we've done this for decades in other countries. So I'd love to see us exposing and being transparent of that fact if we really want to solve the intervention in our own elections.
Well, the election intervention, there's no question you're right. I mean, my God, the United States is, we do it the old-fashioned way where we just replace leaders around the world, or we do it the new-fashioned way with our own sort of technologies. But this is a situation in which if you're served advertisements, as you're saying, which is interesting, that bothers me less than being served information or disinformation.
Yeah.
And that's really what's happening now. They're carpet bombing Facebook and other social media sites with news that is not accurate and is being churned out like sausage links around the world and then distributed across these social network platforms. Well,
and was also marketing themselves as being able to sway elections based on the content that they were producing in terms of online advertising. And they were saying they were, you know, a forerunner in their field. So I think that should be up for public debate.
Right. Whether or not it influenced elections or even the Brexit vote, I mean, there's talk about it in that context.
Yes.
Jury might still be out on that, although, as you say, we don't really know, so let's just put it aside. But certainly that, again, that news or information that's served to you because they know certain things about you from an analytic standpoint, that could be very dangerous.
And just last thing, because as journalists, we know that Facebook is not a publisher, it won't own the fact that they're a publisher, so they won't go to due diligence to mine the information that it's on its site or being paid for to be on its site. So I think that's what I mean by it needs to be up for public debate is whether or not if Facebook is a publisher, then it needs to go through all this sort of content. If it's not, then there needs to be a different sort of conversation to have in terms of what information is available and what information can be bought.
Thanks. Are we taking a break now? I know we mentioned we were going to go to break. Okay, great. We'll take a break now and we'll be back with more TYT.
Thanks for watching what I hope was a lovely edition of the Young Turks. Now, you know that is two of the five segments that we do because that's free. We want to have you support independent media and come watch the whole show that we do every day. That's five segments overall, no ads at all. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Come become a member. Thanks for watching either way.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.